Darling, willkommen in meinem neuen magischen Geschenkuniversum mit legendären Kleinigkeiten, Kostbarkeiten und Schätzen. Von traumhaften Überraschungen bis zu himmlischen Geschenken. Es ist für all die Stars in deinem Leben etwas dabei. Lass zu Weihnachten deine Beauty-Wünsche wahr werden mit Charlotte Tilbury.
Hey everybody, what you're going to hear today is just part one of Chris and I's evaluation of the entire Connie Forbes interview. So part one will be posted today. You'll hear that. Tomorrow, Thursday, we'll post part two. And on Friday, we will post part three. Thanks for listening.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne,
a lyrical analysis of Kanye West.
My name's Chris Lambert.
My name is Travis Bean, and God, I usually have some sort of clever quip, but I don't even know where to start today.
Yeah, this is gonna be a weird one, and I think it's weird not just because of our reactions, but because of the weird reaction to the weird reaction overall. Mm. Like, it's way less clear to me than in 2018 when Kanye came out in support of Trump and had the TMZ interview. Like, when that happened, I felt kind of focused in what the talking points were and where to go with them. And with this and the Forbes article that just came out, the interview that he did about running for president and political contents, I feel way more like discombobulated.
Yeah, like, this is so dumb, this is so overly dramatic, but like, my heart's racing right now because I'm scared of, like, not that I'm scared of saying the wrong thing, I really ain't, because I know how I feel about it, and we'll talk in depth about everything, but it's just so strange because I agree with you. Like, this has never really happened with me before in, I guess I'll call it my Kanye fandom, but just I guess me as a follower of Kanye and appreciator of his music, and some of the stuff he does in the public realm. But it's always been give and take of Kanye. Like, some of the stuff he does in public, like, I'm not thrilled about. And today is definitely like the weirdest time for that part of me ever.
Yeah, and I imagine that this is how a lot of people felt in 2018 when Kanye mm-hmm. first started getting more political in this way and came out in support of Trump. For a lot of people, that was disorienting. That was the line for them. And I imagine that this is that situation for a lot of other people, because even back at that time, you could point to things like, well, you know, we know that he supports Trump's like campaign and the idea of Trump as president, but maybe not the political views. He's talked about Bernie Sanders. There were all these, or even with the TMZ thing, like, he's mm-hmm. talked about slavery, but he said 400 years of mental slavery. There were these things that I think put it into perspective. And there's so much in this interview that it's not just those two talking points, right? Right. It's like 57 talking points.
Yeah.
That, like, some of them do fall into those categories where you can point to them and be like, I understand where he's coming from here, phrasing, but others just get at more of the fundamental issues that people like are more dead set on and like take as way more in the realm of political rather than opinion, right? And looking at policy mm-hmm. rather than just
yes.
personal life choices. And you're getting people on both sides that feel strongly for and against, which, yeah, makes for a dynamic and loaded conversation.
Yeah, you pointed it out. It's a loaded conversation because it's one thing for Kanye to, like, have an opinion, okay? Like, just let's stop and end it right there. Like, Kanye likes Trump. I know a lot of people that like Trump. You know, my dad likes Trump, and I'm not ready to, like, write off my dad. I'm ready to listen to my dad, have a dialogue with my dad, and understand it. And that's exactly the experience I went through with Kanye and his support of Trump. And really, that's that's the deal with Kanye. It's always been the deal of Kanye. If you're a fan of Kanye, or even if you're not a fan of Kanye and you're reacting to what he's saying, like, it's all about how we're able to handle him and like what he believes. And so me as a Kanye fan, of course, I'm a Kanye fan. Like, I host a fucking podcast about him. I'm a top tier Kanye fan. So like, for me, it's really like, I understand the complicated emotions that come with like liking an artist who has an opinion you don't share. I am able to separate the art and the artist in a lot of way people aren't. But the difference to me, and really what's made this whole conversation different, is we've gone from opinion to, as you said, policy. It's one thing to support Kanye and his growth as a human being and him figuring out his place in the world. It's another if Kanye West is the leader of the free world and is implementing the kinds of things he's talking about in this interview. That's a whole different bag.
Yeah, I mean, I think that gets into, not to get, I mean, this has to be a political episode in general, but it's, I think that gets at something where people talk about freedom of speech regarding, you know, people with more dynamic's not even the right word, like supremacist fueled content, not putting Kanye in that bag, but that it's a similar thing where it's like, if you look at any extremist political party, whether it's on the left or on the right, and them claiming freedom of speech, it's one thing to be interested in those views. It's one thing to discuss them. It's another thing to start to craft policy around them. And when you start looking to craft policy around an extremist left view or an extremist right view, you start to affect a lot of people in that regard, which sets people off. It becomes less about free speech at that point and more about the political landscape of the country. And the same thing happens if you're looking at implementing religious standards and practices into politics for people that don't share those religious principles.
Yeah, that'll be the touchiest area when we get to those in the quotes.
Yeah. So for this episode, we're going to go through the Forbes article, looking at the points Kanye made and just kind of discussing them, adding some context and discussion to them, reactions to them, I'm sure will be prevalent, and just kind of looking at it. It's been about 14 hours since the article came out, 15 hours since the article came out. And I just got to say, overall, the reaction hasn't been quite as like barn burning as I thought it was going to be.
You mean from like people condemning Kanye?
Yeah, I seriously thought I was going to wake up to just like the Twitter feed full of...
What's going on?
Ice Maker.
Oh, okay. Ice Maker could be part of the show.
I was just going to let it...
It's kind of soothing. It's, that should be like a white noise, like one of the sounds on a white noise machine.
I thought I'd wake up to Twitter and that it would just be like article after article all about more of the dramatic points that Kanye had made. But really what I saw was just the Kanye dumps Trump, or Kanye's against Trump, or Kanye says birthday party is the name of his party. Just more of the, I don't know, just not the dramatic stuff. So a lot of the stuff I've seen on the timeline is kind of just mixed reaction rather than the dramatic negative reaction that it seemed when the article first came out and I was seeing people's responses.
Yeah, I guess it's been weird for me too. And maybe in this part, Chris, you can indulge me a bit because I wanted to kind of get into something. Because, you know, you must have had a strange journey last night. Like, you were one of the first people to read this article and like you expected this uproar when you woke up. That must have been crazy.
Yeah. It definitely was strange to go to bed seeing like people be like, oh no. And waking up and seeing like,
yeah, and I mean, like, that's been weird for me too. Like, I woke up and read it, and like, I was in a very weird state this morning as I read it. Like, I felt very out of body, and not even that, like, I don't know. I guess, like, this gets into my complicated history with Kanye, and like, and I feel like this is good, and feel free to add to this, Chris, all you want, but like, I took a bunch of notes this morning and I wanted to talk about some of them, which is something I don't usually do for the show. Like, I know Kanye inside and out, like, I didn't ever really need to like take notes and read them, but I just like, I had a whirlwind of thoughts going this morning that I've always kind of wanted to express in the show, but never had like the balls to, mostly because like, I think it would disappoint a lot of Kanye fans who, you know, Kanye's really important to them, and he is very important to me in a lot of ways, but I feel like it's important for people who listen to this show to have like a better understanding of its host and how we function and operate and what we, you know, how we feel about Kanye. And the big reason I've been thinking about this is I have I think about my best friend, his name is Andy, and we've been like best friends our entire lives. You know, we ate lunch together every day in high school. We were captains of the high school tennis team. We were roommates in college, like everything. And after college, he moved to Arizona, and we only like mildly have kept in touch since then, but it really isn't weird at all. Like, we don't need to, because every time we get together, like, it's the easiest thing in the world. But the last time we got back together, Kanye came up, and I could just tell that like, it seemed like he didn't understand me anymore. Like, it was like, it hurt me a lot that he like felt this way, because Kanye came up and he was like, but what about Donald Trump? You know, like, what about this and that and these things he says? And you come to realize that by hosting a Kanye podcast, this is how everybody thinks of you. You know, anytime you're in a conversation with a new person, the second they find out you host a Kanye podcast, like, they have this idea about you. And I could give two shits about some stranger or rando that, you know, forms a thought about me and wants to put me into a box. But the second my lifelong best friend does it, it hurts. And it's really got me thinking about why I do this show and letting people know why I do the show. So heading into this interview I was reading this morning, I have to say, like, I wasn't really surprised by it. Like, I'm surprised by it in the sense of like that I feel hurt by it. But like, when I really think about it from more like a journalistic point of view, a lot of these things Kanye is saying, like, kind of keep in line with what he's been like, you know, his energy, his Trump energy, like, he's been on this kick for a while. And I think, I had a much different reaction than I think though still than most people had, because I think a lot of people read this interview and they're really sad. And I think that's because like, people idolize Kanye, the person. And when you idolize a person, and instead of idolizing their art, then you're unable to separate the art from the artist, which some people can't do. That's fine. But when you can't do that, when you can't separate the art from the artist, then anytime that person does something you find egregious or immoral or anything you don't agree with, you feel like the art has betrayed you, which isn't true. I can't speak for Chris. He can jump in whenever he wants here. But like, I started this podcast because I believed in Kanye's art, that Kanye's art could do good in this world. You know, been writing about movies and music and books and shit my whole life. Like, I always wanted to be a film critic because I believed in the power of art and stories. And I know Chris and I looked at Kanye's music and thought, like, this guy's doing that. Like, he is telling his stories in his on his albums like movies do. And the more we understand these stories, the more we can better empathize and understand the world. And Kanye has just been better than that than anybody. Like, that's why I was inspired by Kanye. When I think of Kanye, I think of his art. Yes, I'm empowered by other things he does and his like immense belief in himself. The fact that he ran up on the VMA stage and stole the award from Taylor's hands, like, I don't agree with the action, but like, fuck yes, like, fuck award shows. Like, I'm so inspired by somebody who's willing to go that far. But I think this is just an area where like, I really do split with Kanye fans, because as much as I'm inspired by Kanye, I'm not going to sit around and pretend everything he says should be immortalized in gold or something. Like, I'm a stan. I'm very much the definition of a stan, but I'm not the kind of stan that like lives and breathes by everything he says. People grow, people change. And that means that when people grow and change, like, you know, I'm growing and changing too. And with that means that some people don't carry as much meaning in my life as they once did, or the same kind of meaning. So as I've grown and changed and experienced all the nuances of the world, I've been able to more clearly separate the art from the artist and realize what art inspires me and what about an artist inspires me. a lot of the things Kanye said in the interview don't inspire me. They strike me as somebody, I don't know, they want to live in a world I don't. And it's different. And it's one thing for it to be your opinion, but it's another thing for it to be policy that's going to affect my life and the people I love lives. And I guess that's my way of encapsulating what's been going on this morning. Like, Kanye is flawed and complicated. And as I've gotten older, I've become flawed and complicated. Like, I've understood this is the way people are. But I always think of the Matthew McConaughey Oscar speech where they asked him, like, who's your hero? They asked him this when he was a kid. And he thought about it and he said, my hero is me in 10 years. And I've always thought about that. And I love that because it made me realize that, like, I need to be idolizing myself. I can't idolize Kanye the person, because Kanye the person is going to do stuff I don't agree with. And he's going to live his life in ways I don't think I should. And if he becomes president, he's clearly trying to lead this nation in a way that, like, doesn't, you know, jive with what I believe in. So all that said, in my mind, this is why I separate art from artists, because the artist can betray you, but the art can't. Like, art is immortal. It is what it is. Even if Kanye goes in and bleeps out all the curse words in his songs, like, the art, like, I'll still have my copy of The College Dropout. Like, it is what it is. It exists. And there's nothing in the world that Kanye the person could ever do or say that would change that.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Which, that's a very interesting point. Like, so much of what you said, I agree with. And I do want to remind people, I feel like a lot of them already know, but as much as we are fans of Kanye's art, as much as we are fans of Kanye the person, or have, like, the aspects of him that we admire, we're also, like, journalists and scholars of Kanye as well. And that this isn't just overall, like, fan podcast fun, right, but is also, like, a career work for us, right, in understanding, like, the work of this artist, but also discussing the artist and contextualizing the artist. It's no different than, it's a modernized version of what scholars have been doing in, like, journal articles and books and teaching classes on people for years, right? Mm-hmm. We're just doing it in podcast form and on social media and in a tone and style that's much more, like, I don't know, conversational. But yeah, there's a layers to that as people that are fans of the music, people that have a relationship with the artist, and then as just scholars approaching Kanye from that perspective. But it is interesting because I feel like I've had less, like, a harder time separating art from artists. Just, mm-hmm, I can do it generally. Like, I don't listen to a Pink Floyd album and think, like, oh, what were the artists saying? Or, like, Beatle, like, just, yeah. I'd say 99.99% of the time I do. But with Kanye and the relationship that we've developed with him, I feel like it's become harder for me, mm-hmm, to make that separation. And maybe not so much before, right? But I think this is the time where it's become, yeah, the most challenging, because I put it into context of sequels, and I've actually been ranting to my wife about this recently, but I tend to get really bothered by sequels. And this came up from Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049, because at the end of Blade Runner, you have Deckard running off with Rachel, and you realize that he's either a replicant or a human that's fallen in love with this other replicant, and they're going to go have this relationship for as long as they can have it. And there's something beautiful about them not knowing how much time they have and trying to escape and run away from this, like, system that they've been a part of, to just have each other and what that represents for each of them. If Deckard's a human, then it means that he sees this person that he thought of as only a created thing now as being like a person due to the journey he went on, or if he's a replicant, he at least has this awareness of himself and her. Like, there's cool stuff. But when you look at Blade Runner 2049, it just says like, yeah, they ran to this thing and he left and they didn't see each other, and it's been like 30 years. And it takes whatever potential their love story had and eliminates it and defines it as just what it is. Same thing with Fight Club. Like, they did a sequel to Fight Club, and it's like 10 years later, like, you Tyler and Marla. Yeah.
Okay. I was like, is there a movie?
Yeah, not the movie. 10 years later, Tyler and Marla, like, are having a kid, and Tyler's stressed again, and his other self comes back, burns the house down, and now he's, like, fighting with himself again. And you're like, okay, so everything that we went through in the first movie just gets thrown out the window, and now he's back to having the same issues. It kind of spoils the first movie in some way if I start to engage with that. So there's something like going back to listening to College Dropout or Late Registration and knowing that Kanye's views have changed to a certain degree so much. In some ways, they're very much the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the albums will always be relevant and powerful to me no matter what it is Kanye does. But there's a little bit of a bittersweet aspect as Kanye kind of not just loses some of the innocence that he had, but starts to define himself more through his religious beliefs and how that maybe goes against or how that conflicts with things that he had said or done or stances he had had earlier in his albums, that you just start to see more of the gap between where he was at then and where he's at now and feeling. I mean, some people won't mind at all. They'll appreciate that. And others, like for myself, will feel like, oh, this is a little sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally feel everything you're saying and don't disagree with any of it and empathize with a lot of it. And I think I'm going through something similar. I guess I would phrase it as like, it isn't harder for me to separate art from artists, but like that line and that like feeling and mindset that comes with that is different. Like, it just feels different now to go back and listen to College Dropout. It doesn't make me like it less or appreciate it less, but listening to College Dropout with like Kanye's this interview of mine, like, yeah, shit's different now. It's not the same. Yeah, I don't remember what else I was gonna say, but yeah, that's pretty much
which I like. On the one hand, I know this is gonna sound alarmist to some people, especially coming from us. On the other hand, I do think it's healthy to be able to talk about this stuff and just to be able to know, like, with any relationship with anyone or anything, you're gonna have like periods where you have conflict. I mean, it would be nice if you didn't, but it happens. And I don't think it's anything more severe than us processing this and looking at it and having our initial reactions, and that'll change over time as well. But 15 hours removed from the interview, this is where we're at.
Also, if you want to host a Kanye West podcast, you better accept that your life is going to be a little stressful sometimes. So we're okay with this. Like, we're going to go through this interview. We're going to do it.
Yeah. Real fast, I wanted to get more into, I guess, some scene setting. I had just recorded a YouTube video that was going over a lot of the response to Kanye's announcements. And it was me kind of speculating on where he had been politically and things he had said, kind of what we did in our initial reaction to Kanye's announcements. And I literally finished the video, opened up YouTube to upload it, had clicked upload, but it had reloaded for some reason. So I just checked Twitter real fast and I saw the interview was posted. And I started reading it and just immediately deleted the video because I was like, this is no longer part of everything. And I was seeing the initial responses. I just tweeted out real fast, like, what is this interview? After reading the first paragraph. And a lot of the responses I was getting was like, don't, it's bad, like, hide, stay off Twitter. And I read all of it, then made a 40-minute YouTube video on it. But I was really curious because it was like 2 a.m. How you and Jordan were going to feel, and had sent you all some texts that were priming material.
Yeah.
But waking up to that, like, what was that like for you heading into things?
Yeah, that was That was interesting. It was actually nice to be able to talk about that with Jordan right off the bat in the morning, because when you read an interview like this, you have some very immediate reactions, and you want to be, the instinct is to be dramatic and declare something immediately. But it was nice to kind of steep in it and bounce my thoughts off somebody. And I guess what I realized by doing that is what I've already said, is that this interview like isn't crazy surprising to me. Like, it's disappointing. Kanye's my guy. Like, I don't like to hear him saying a lot of the stuff he's saying, like the anti-vax stuff. But I mean, this is Kanye in a nutshell. Like, this is what he does. He's never not controversial. I think he's just finally taken it to a different level, and I liked what Jordan said, actually. It's because Kanye's going political, and politics is not the same thing as art. And in art, like, you can create these worlds that are a reflection of reality, where they have their own rules and their own characters, and you can look at these worlds and think, like, you know, that's the kind of world I want to live in, or that informs me about the world I live in. This is not that. This is Kanye in reality speaking English, like, saying things we all understand, and like, there's no second guessing what he's saying or reading into. Like, what Kanye said is what he says and what he believes and what he apparently plans to do if he ever actually became president. I have no idea if that could happen, but Trump became president, so maybe it fucking could. I don't know. But yeah, I guess that kind of encapsulates how I was feeling this morning.
Yeah, I think there's two things, like, heading into the interview that we probably need to keep in mind, mm-hmm. is that it says up front that this was a 4-hour interview.
Of course.
Over the course of 4 hours, this is what Kanye said, but we don't know how much of that was actually, like, what's in, how much of that makes up the inner, like, what's in the article, right?
Right.
Like, is this 90% of what he said? Is this 20% of what he said? Is there important context that's cut that would have made at least some of these stances or aspects feel more fleshed out, more agreeable, even more problematic? People keep pointing to the line that Kanye just had about they be editing the interviews. Was that it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, this is a pretty good example of something that, like, we have no idea what the context was for a lot of this. And even if what's said is in order of what was said, right? Which I don't know how much that would really matter at the end of the day, but it's still a consideration that you look at the TMZ interview and how different that is if you just see the initial quote versus what was before it, what was after it. Like, are there things like that that didn't make this article? So that's one thing that, and maybe something we should have said up front just even, is that we're reacting to this as it's presented without knowing what else is in there or missing,
right,
which could change opinion or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say really quick, like, as a journalist who has had really marathon interviews before that go like a couple hours, like, it's kind of the curse of a journalist that you can't use everything. And Kanye West agreed to a written article. Like, he has to know, like, something like that's gonna happen, especially if you ramble for 4 hours. Like, you can only use so much of that. So I actually think this article, I would imagine, like, it's ethical, and the Randall who wrote it, like, was trying his best to represent what Kanye said in response to, I mean, it is a platform article. Like, it is literally Kanye's platform. Like, all it is Randall asking a question, and, like, here's Kanye's answer. And yes, of course, like, we don't have the full quote, but Kanye didn't do a podcast or go on TMZ. Like, he agreed to a written interview, so this is what we have.
Yeah, and I mean, some of the positions, like the vaccination stuff or God in school stuff, a lot of the things that I think for each of us are a little bit more of the things. I don't know how much more context would matter in that case, because it's more of just a stance.
Yes,
they are, as you said, they are what they are. And I think that gets into, I mean, the other priming thing that, as you said, a lot of this probably isn't surprising when you step back and think about it, right? Mm-hmm. It might be surprising if you're considering what like 2016 Kanye would have said or what 2010 Kanye would have said. But if we really look at where Kanye has gone since 2018 and the development of his Christian beliefs, a lot of this is in line with known conservative and Christian stances. And that makes a lot of it not surprising. It's just surprising with everything that Kanye had said before that this has become his position on it.
The other thing I want to do to prime all this is that, I mean, 2020 has been just a hell fuck of a year. I don't even know if that's a word, but it seems right in this case. But I feel like the one good thing I've gotten out of it is like I've always thought this, but now I've really understood the importance of listening and listening to people who are oppressed and need help and who feel just dejected by the government, like people who are in a low place that I can't inherently relate to. All I have to do is listen. And I've always felt that way about Kanye, actually. And I felt that way about him since 2018, thinking about like where he's really trying to come from and what he's really trying to say. So, I mean, with that said, like that's kind of the stance I'm going to bring to a lot of this, because it's one thing to listen to Kanye, the person, and this guy who has opinions and, you know, thinks the world should be this way or that. But it's another if he's going to be a politician. I think about politicians very differently about their opinions, because their opinions become something else and control my life. So I'm trying to bring that into this, because I imagine that an African American's view of this article would be much different than mine. A woman's view of this article would be much different than mine. And I'm trying to consider all that as we look through this, and that's all I can do. Like I feel like it's not really on me to have like opinions on a lot of this policy that doesn't affect me. And so I just would say that's kind of the mindset I'm bringing into it.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 €. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 €. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
That was something I was thinking about the other day, or just yesterday. An NBA player, Steven Jackson, got a lot of flack because DeSean Jackson put up an NFL player for the Eagles. I think he's still on the Eagles. Put up a post on Instagram that was quoting that it's attributed to Hitler, which is never a good way to start a conversation, but it's actually, was it a Hitler quote? It's from what I was reading. It's actually like Nation of Islam quote, but it was something about black people are the true children of Israel. And there were statements in the quote. It was a few paragraphs, short paragraphs, that are anti-Semitic in ways, but are also very like pro-black. And Jackson was using it as kind of like a something to feel empowered by, I believe. And it's something that even at the start of a written testimony, the Jay Electronica album, there's a similar quote at the beginning of that. And he was getting a ton of flack, like, oh, anti-Semitic, like, how can you quote Hitler? Yada yada yada, all these people like really attacking. And Steven Jackson, the NBA player, like came to his defense and saying there's like truth in this, yada yada, and people started attacking him. And on the one hand, like, I get being against anything like that you perceive to come from Hitler, or even reading into the anti-Semitic aspects of it and being like, how can you support a statement of that? But it also speaks to the fact that I think minority communities in America feel such pressure and oppression that a quote that gives them a sense of empowerment, or gives someone a sense of empowerment, whether it's you're in a group that is racially oppressed, like, or even just politically oppressed or genderly oppressed, like anything, any kind of oppressed perspective, when you hear something that makes you feel special and feel relevant, it's empowering, it's nice. And I think that's more of where Jackson was coming from than anything else, which, yeah, I makes sense to me, like what you were saying. Like, there's perspectives that, like, you and I can't really understand from our experiences, but we can try to put ourselves in a position to understand where somebody might be coming from or why this is appealing or making sense from what they go through and experience.
Yeah. Or even if you relate to Kanye's music in a much different way, as in, here's this black man, like, speaking to the black youth and building them up to see that person become this, like, that's a very different mindset for which to read this interview. Like, it's just something we always have to consider as, like, two white guys hosting a Kanye West podcast. It's, we can't possibly do an episode like this justice, but we're going to try.
Yeah. So, let's get into it. We're just going to read through and have our responses at the ready. So, Randall Lane, Forbes staff. He is the chief content officer and editor of Forbes and posts on business, philanthropy, and food. Okay, I am chief content officer and editor of Forbes and post on business. How I said it, that read wrong, and I was just like, did the chief content officer and editor of Forbes have, like, a grammatical error in his?
No.
Okay.
I think he's telling us he'd like to have a burger with us, though.
So it starts with kind of a header. Kanye West's 4th of July declaration via tweet that he was running for president lit the internet on fire, even as pundits were trying to discern how serious he was. Over the course of 4 rambling hours, just have to throw rambling in there, of interviews on Tuesday, the billionaire rapper turned sneaker mogul revealed. And then let's just get into it. That he's running for president in 2020 under a new banner, the birthday party, with guidance from Elon Musk and an obscure vice presidential candidate he's already chosen. Like anything I've ever done in my life, says West, I'm doing to win.
Sounds very West.
Very West. And the birthday party, actually, there was an interview somebody posted that I believe he was on Breakfast Club or one of Chicago radio stations in 2018. And he actually, it could have actually been Breakfast Club, like back in 2016 or something. But he makes mention that his party would be the birthday party. And they all kind of laugh and they're like, what's that mean? And Kanye kind of sits there. He's like, it's just a joke. and they all laugh again. So it's just funny that, like, he comes back to birthday party. Wow. It is funny.
This joke really spiraled out of control.
It's elaborate. It's an elaborate one.
The long con.
Yeah. And so this confirms, like, the theory that this isn't just album promotion. He's saying that he wants to win. Yeah. We get that he no longer supports President Trump. I'm taking the red hat off with this interview.
Okay.
That's a huge thing. Actually, that's the headline that I've seen the most in response to this article, rather than anything else, is just like Kanye done with Trump.
That is interesting because, like, he's supposedly denouncing Trump, even though it seems like he still likes Trump for all the reasons he likes Trump. And he will be running as an independent if Trump is the Republican. I don't know. Seems weird.
Yeah, but I guess at this point, you know that you can't campaign as a Republican against Trump.
Sure, that makes sense.
Especially at this point. Is it the primary over?
Yeah, although Kanye doesn't seem to care about rules when it comes to that kind of stuff.
No. I mean, even for him, I feel like he was just like, why would I primary? Like, I'm just in the race. Like, that's it. I'm in the race. I'm not getting told by a party that, like, yeah, I did it. Like, yeah. I'm winning once and I'm winning everything. That he's okay with siphoning off black votes from the Democratic nominee, thus helping Trump. I'm not denying it. I just told you, to say that black vote is Democratic is a form of racism and white supremacy. And that's one where, when I first read it, I'm just like, well, there it is. Mm-hmm. But looking back on it now, like, is there context ahead of this, after this? Like, we're getting the contextualizing from Randall, mm-hmm. which might be accurate, but also just given everything else that we've seen be yeah. taken out of context by Kanye over time, when he's saying I'm not denying it, is it specifically that? Mm-hmm. But it does seem that Kanye doesn't want people to vote for Biden, so
okay, sure, we get it.
Yeah. That he's never voted in his life, we knew that. that he was sick with COVID-19 in February. That was actually
pretty shocking.
Big revelation. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially the way he talks about it in the interview, that was some weird shit to read.
Yeah, the strange thing, I mean, maybe I should save it for later, but I feel like we saw him still like wearing the mask, like with his family, quarantining and doing all of that. I also imagine it surprised me because it seemed like the things that somebody would do if they didn't have it, right? Rather than, I feel like if people have it, they feel a little bit more invincible.
Yeah.
Not to doubt it, but it was just surprising to me.
Yeah.
That he's suspicious of a coronavirus vaccine, terming vaccines the mark of the beast. We'll get into that.
We will.
That he believes Planned Parenthoods have been placed inside cities by white supremacists to do the devil's work. And I found out more information about that theory today, so we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And that he envisions a White House organizational model based on the secret country of Wakanda and Black Panther.
I gotta say, that was probably the least surprising bullet point of all of them.
Yeah, that's one of the ones where I'm just like, that's classic Kanye, and people are gonna take that way out of like context. And
I mean, honestly, like, sounds kind of cool. I don't know. I just like, I love when Kanye talks like that.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, I feel like literature, movies are like, often envisions what things could be. And then people respond to that by saying like, oh, can we take aspects of that? Like, those are good ideas. How can we implement these? Like, a lot of the speculative sci-fi of the 40s, 50s, and 60s went on to form a lot of what scientists were attempting to do, or like, is this possible, you know?
Right. And Kanye's always, I mean, he's always done that. The Yeezus tour, like, reflected Holy Mountain, you know? The, what's that director's name? Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky, yeah.
I mean, Kanye always does this. So it's more, I think, him speaking just a way of like providing context and like an image you could put in your head, like, oh, that's what he means.
Right. And like, this is what I'm drawing inspiration from.
Right.
Like, we can connect to the shared concept of this. Now let's apply it.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to part one of our evaluation of the Kanye Forbes interview. Tomorrow, you can find part two. And then on Friday, we will post part three. Stay wavy.
And they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol.